This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. Ethan Eternal, Chapter 35, Father and Son. Jason knocked on the old screen door and took in a heavy breath. This is the last place he wanted to be today, though he yearned to return and look into the eyes of the last family he had left. He had tried to come here many times, but since his mother's death, never seemed to be a good time or enough strength in him to face the man that he had failed. A bolt turned. The doctor and scientist felt his jaw tighten. The knob began to turn, and then finally the door parted slightly. Familiar scents came rushing from the past, but these were present aromas. The smell of candles, sage, peppers, and corn boiling inside a pot older than his memories allowed. He could almost see the steam rising in the kitchen. He could almost taste all of it. He saw her through the veil of time. Saw her smiling, dancing the way she would when she was happy. Singing that old song from Mexico. Jason shut his eyes. It was too much to bear.
Mijo?
An old man's voice arose. Jason froze in terror. He heard the latch release and knew that there was only a moment left before God would demand that this prodigal son behold his father. But time would not wait for him any longer. The door opened. Deborah stood with Cindy a few feet away, holding hands and watching. A cold wind blew across them as the door began to open. Cindy instinctively covered her face with Bob. Deborah saw this, wanted to do something, but after a second of thinking, decided not to interfere. Instead, she held onto the girl's tiny hand a little harder. An old Hispanic man peered out from behind the screen door. He seemed confused as he quickly removed a pair of glasses from the pocket of a neatly kept blue work shirt. Jason's father was a poor man, but took great care in the things he had. His skin was pale, but weathered from many years of hard work and low wages. Deborah was surprised to see that, although every strand of hair this man had was white, he had a full head of it, and it had been combed neatly to one side. Jason looked to his father, and the old man stared back. There was a prolonged silence as the two met one another's eyes. It was almost uncomfortable. After several seconds, a smile crept across the time-ravaged face looking back, and a raspy voice followed.
Jason, my son, you've come home.
Jim Peabody pushed forward into the dark and falling ash. The sounds of the crumbling structure had overcome all other noise. He could hear wooden beams cracking and popping nearby and knew that the building would hold its integrity for only a little longer. And yet, he pushed on. He had come here to see Ethan Dorian killed for all that had been done. Jim had no intention of abandoning that. not even to save himself. Kevin Hill followed behind his friend, two pistols drawn. The loss of blood from his injury had drained some of his strength, but not all of it. He was actually beginning to regain some of his composure. The wound was concerning, because the pain that it had brought was also diminishing. He tried to push away his fears and focus on the path ahead, and so the two men stepped carefully into the breaking shadows. The cloud of smoke ahead seemed to part for an instant as a beam of white light penetrated the charred hall. Jim raised a hand to block the unexpected light as he stepped into a larger chamber. Somewhere, not too far ahead, the way forward ended. Sunlight revealed the end of Dorian's great fortress. But then the smoke fell back like a retracted curtain and returned the room to darkness. Jim blinked away the sudden change in luminosity as he took a new step forward. He thought that he heard something above, a sound like the whipping of helicopter rotors approaching in the sky. Another helicopter was coming. He started to turn back to let Kevin know what he had just heard, but before his body could revolve, a giant seized the gun that the young man was holding in his hands. Jim shot his eyes up. From the blackness, a dark figure emerged. The young police officer tried to squeeze the trigger, but George pressed down so firmly that it was not possible. Dorian's minion pulled Jim towards him and knocked the gun to the floor. Jim's eyes widened as his face came within inches of the sinister stare before him, and the moment stretched into several, until, at last, George smiled. Kevin did not see Jim. He only stared in stunned horror and amazement at the child. His mind could not accept the truth of what he was seeing. He would not believe it. The dark-haired boy was resting quietly, his hands stretched out in front of him, watching them as though his very fingers contained some unseen magic. The father watched his son as a battle began nearby, frozen in the moment, prisoner to his doubts, until he heard his own voice proclaim the name that he had struggled to speak even to himself. Danny! Cindy would not sit on the couch. She took the bowl of soup and then quickly made her way to the far corner of the living room. She squatted down with her back to the wall and devoured the offering of food without pausing. Deborah watched her from the cushioned surface that the girl denied and wondered at the hell that this child had survived. It would take time before trust could be established. Deborah would be patient. She watched Cindy with a warm smile, sharing in the steaming meal. Deborah turned her eyes towards Jason's father. He was sitting upon a thick recliner nearby. Jason was at the opposite end of the couch from Deborah and was near his father. The two had been staring down into their soup bowls for the past minute or so. The woman ended their silence.
Mr. Rodriguez, do you have a pen and paper?
The old man nodded slightly, then turned his eyes towards the girl, and understanding came over his face, and he nodded more vigorously.
Oh, yes, I think I'd have just the thing.
He set down his bowl beside a lamp at a small end table, and then lifted himself up with an exertion he masked by clearing his throat. Jason watched his father rise from the chair, step into the dining room, and then return a moment later with two pencils and a long pad of yellow paper. The old man smiled at his son, and then Deborah, as he stepped past them, walking carefully to the corner of the room. He knelt down as Cindy lifted up her eyes. She pulled back her body as he came closer, but then, as Cindy noticed the offering extended in her direction, her eyes grew, and her anxiety seemed to melt away. She almost dropped the bowl, but Bob caught it for her. The girl reached out and snatched the pencils and paper eagerly. The soup could wait. The elder man watched as Cindy analyzed the pencils eagerly for a moment, but then lowered her head down close to the paper and began to feverishly draw. Her fixation was complete. The room vanished. Cindy was alone in the room, alone again with Bob, an island once more. Everything melted from her consciousness, vanished into the murk of absent thought, as had been her way for so many years, until now. The girl blinked her eyes and lifted up her face. She turned and met the glowing smile of the angel. Cindy tried to smile, though it was not truly possible, but she endured the pain of the effort long enough to take in the features of Deborah's face. All of her drawings had been based on the memories of dreams. But now, the angel was here. She studied the face with enraptured consideration until at last Deborah spoke. "What is your name?" The girl frowned, seemed puzzled for an instant. Deborah motioned to the pencil in her hands and nodded.
"Can you write it down?"
Cindy hesitated for a second, glanced down at the paper, and then back to Deborah. There was a delay, as though the girl was debating inside herself, and she was, for Bob was offering his perspective. Cindy heard him out, pondered on his worries, but then met Deborah's eyes again and nodded. She turned her eyes down once more to the yellow sheets on the pad in her lap and carefully etched out the only name she had ever known. Deborah stepped across the room and then knelt down beside the girl. Cindy lifted up her eyes as the angel glanced down to the name written below. With a wide smile, Deborah spoke her name aloud.
"Cindy. Oh, that's a pretty name."
Cindy felt herself blush. She could not remember anyone ever telling her something so wonderful. Jason's father turned to him and whispered,
"Jason, what is going on?"
The young scientist looked away from the two girls and into the concerned stare looking back. He paused and then nodded as he began,
"Dad, we need some help.
Things went really bad with that man, you know, the one I was working for." The old man leaned back into his chair and exhaled,
"Dorian."
Jason gave this a nod and then continued,
"Yes, you remember then. Oh yes, my son. I remember that jackal. Your mother told you that he was the devil. She knew."
Jason shook his head.
"She knew. You knew. We all knew, but I needed..."
Dr. Rodriguez paused. An agitation grew and came over his features. His father saw this and gave his son a comforting pat on the knee.
"I know what you wanted, mijo. But you aren't God. You can't do this. You can't keep on blaming yourself. Look at me, Jason. Look at me."
Jason met his father's eyes. The withered face that stared back was full of compassion and love, not contempt for the failure that the son had held on to for so long. It was a surprising discovery. Before his son could dwell on this for too long, though, the older man continued,
"She's gone. Your mother. She's gone."
A tear ran down Jason's cheek as his father spoke these words. He had struggled for so long to avoid this moment, but it could no longer be delayed. He knew that his father was right. The time had come to accept it.
I'm sorry, Papa.
Jason dropped his face into his hands. His father leaned forward and took his son into his arms, holding him, just holding him. Deborah and Cindy looked across the room and watched as a father and son faced a darkness that had been ignored for far too long. An old woman, old beyond her years, lay wearily upon a white hospital bed. A tube fed her. Another helped her breathe. She rested beneath a white sheet, but her skin was almost as pale. Jason stepped to her side and placed his hand upon hers. The woman's eyes opened slowly. A pained smile crossed her face. The young man began to cry.
Mama, I have another. This one will work.
She reached up and curled her skeletal fingers around his. Her eyes widened with warm and loving affection. A faint voice arose as she struggled to answer the son that had come to visit.
Mijo, my mijo,
Jason pressed on.
I have a new serum. This one is more advanced than anything I have ever made. It will work.
His voice began to crack as he spoke to her. Development of Meritus had been slow. No breakthrough had come in weeks. He knew, against all of his hopes, that this would be no cure. But it might buy him some more time. Just a little. Anything.
Mama, I know how hard it is. I know how much this hurts, but you're gonna be better. I'm gonna fix this, okay? I need you to let me do this. It will work this time.
She looked to her son for a long moment, watching him with a mother's care, then lifted a hand to his face and brushed his hair from his eyes. He could only stare back as she smiled. She had endured so much.
No, Jason, no. What do you mean?
Jason protested, but his mother continued in a firmer voice.
No more.
No, he replied with a growing anxiety. No, Mama, you have to let me help you. She took his hands with both of hers and squeezed.
Listen to me. You are so amazing. You are so much smarter than I ever was. So smart. And I am so proud of you. I will always be so proud of you, Mio.
Jason felt a desperation growing inside.
Mama, you're not going to give up. You are going to live, I promise.
The woman squeezed her son's hands as her voice became sterner. The look in her eyes shifted from compassion to conviction.
You have to let me go, Jason. You have to let me go.
He heard her words and saw the certainty in those tired eyes. Rodriguez knew that he could save her. He knew this, but he also knew that he could not save his mother today. If there was only more time, if there was only more, but there was none. Within days, she fell into a coma. Within a week, Jason's mother was gone. The cancer had taken her, like so many others. and despite all of his research, experiments, despite the heavy price of his employment to Ethan Dorian, he could not save his own mother. Forgiveness is hardest when we look inside ourselves and wonder at our failures. There could be no greater failure for Dr. Jason Rodriguez. To add to his guilt, the long-due breakthrough that he had been waiting for came only a few days after she was gone. Ironically, she had been the source of his discovery. Deborah and Cindy held Jason's hands as he struggled to look them in the eye. His father watched them as he rocked back and forth in his recliner. After a few seconds, the old man spoke up.
"You couldn't save her, Jason. No one could. The cancer is like that. It's not your fault."
Jason nodded, dwelling on his memories for another moment. Then he turned his eyes up to the two girls at his side. He gave them a polite smile as he muttered to them in appreciation for their concern,
"I'm okay. Thank you."
This was a man of science, but not devoid of feeling. He had long avoided the confrontation of his mother's loss. He knew the toll that her death had taken upon his father, upon their family, but most of his trepidation had been at the thought of facing what had become of the woman that had given him life. He knew that he owed an explanation of so many things to his father. It would be fitting to begin this now, among the company of new friends, who he also owed words.
"I need to explain a few things, and I need you all to listen to me."
Deborah frowned.
"What's wrong?"
He raised a hand and shook his head.
"No. Just listen to me."
He met his father's stare and continued.
"Everyone."
George grabbed Jim by wrapping a massive hand around his face and then threw the policeman into the air. Jim left his feet and glided into a broken wall. As he impacted it, the sheetrock on the outside crumbled away. A thick board that was once stable snapped in two, blackened by a slow burn. Yellow and orange embers plumed into the air as his body smashed the wall down to the floor. As he impacted the wall and floor, Jim choked on the soot that billowed up, struggling to breathe. George stepped over to the young man and snatched an ankle up in his hands. He gave Jim a heavy tug, throwing his body across the floor. Gasping for air, Jim kicked wildly at the menacing monster, but his attack barely fazed George. The giant grabbed a handful of hair on Jim's head, turned towards the nearby light, and began to step out into the day. Jim screamed, kicked, and gripped George's hand with his, fighting to survive.
"Cancer is the key."
Jason looked to the eyes of his father and began the task that he had dreaded for so long. Deborah and Cindy sat quietly and listened, eyes fixed upon him. The old man leaned forward in his chair and heard, at last, what had become of his beloved wife's body.
"It was called Meritus, the Project. That was its name when I was brought on board. Meritus."
Jason took in a heavy breath.
"Meritus is a Latin word. It means father. He chose the name Dorian because of the first part."
Deborah interrupted.
"The first part?"
Jason became grim as he focused on her eyes and then nodded.
"The project was designed with two parts. I was only involved in the second,
The first part of Meredith is what you saw back at his compound. The part that changed the boy. The process that removed his mind and replaced it with Dorian's. Jason's father grew pale as his son continued. I would never have been involved in anything like that. But it was already underway before I was brought in. He needed me, my research, to complete his masterpiece. To complete the second part. Deborah asked gravely, What is the second part? Dr. Rodriguez seemed to cringe as he struggled to answer her.
Immortality.
Kevin wept as he stared into the blue eyes of his son. The boy seemed to blink away a haze of confusion, gaining a clarity that had not been present as his thoughts gave way to a recognition of the man before him.
Daddy! My God!
Kevin fell to his knees. He reached out with both of his hands, losing any restraint left in his emotions. Tears fell freely. God had given this broken husband and father the greatest miracle he could have ever wished for, yet would never have imagined possible. His son was alive. Danny stared into the eyes of his father. He froze. His body seemed to quiver, to shake, as though some unseen power had emerged within him, guiding his tiny soul from whatever limbo it had been banished to, back into the present world. The boy's brow tightened and then rose. A tear ran from one eye, and his face began to shake.
Daddy?
A tiny voice emerged. Jim kicked again and again against the side of the massive figure. George did not react. Peabody knew what would be needed, swallowed, and released the hand of his attacker. The pain caused by the unrestricted force of George's grip on his scalp was overwhelming, yet the young man pushed it down inside, using his own hands for a more effective attack. Jim Peabody punched George again and again. His fists impacted the giant's side and back. At first, this accomplished nothing, but then he found the location where a bullet had pierced the man's flesh in an earlier firefight with Perry Long. George winced and dropped Jim as the sudden sting overcame him. He grabbed his side where the fresh stitches clung to his skin, and fresher blood now wetted his shirt. Jim dropped to the ground outside the devastated home, caught his breath, and then slowly raised himself back up. Monster and man locked eyes. Each stood in the smoke-filled air, fixed on the other's eyes, as an ornate and expensive helicopter began its descent nearby. Jim felt a terror take his heart, and George grinned widely. He knew that this would be the end. James Welch, Paul Emery, and a platoon of 7 soldiers stared down into the sewer from the alley above. Emery held an electronic device in his hand, typing keys rapidly, a scowl written across his face.
Well, where is he?
James asked sarcastically as he lifted up an automatic rifle and rested it against his chest. The younger operative seemed puzzled for a moment, but then turned his eyes to the street nearby.
I'm not sure what happened here, but it looks like he was leaking. I think we can follow the trail of ions.
James lifted an eyebrow skeptically, but Emery appeared convinced. The younger man turned from the sewer and started to walk. Welch asked nothing further. He simply motioned for the soldiers to follow, and soon the hunters were on the trail. But they, too, were being hunted. Through the magnification of a high-powered rifle, Carlos watched the company of soldiers carefully. He remained hidden from sight several hundred yards away atop the roof of an old warehouse. At his side, Vicente flicked a silver blade between gloved fingers. He was growing impatient.
"Just kill them,"
Vicente quipped. Carlos ignored his subordinate and instead lifted himself up from the textured surface of the roof, turning his attention to the team of soldiers that he had brought along.
"Our primary target will be Dr. Rodriguez."
One of the older soldiers nodded and then asked sharply,
"Dead or alive, does it matter?"
Carlos paused and then grinned. It was an odd thing to see.
"If you can kill him, then be my guest."
Vicente giggled as he looked to the soldier and then turned away and followed Carlos down an iron ladder toward the street below. Jim rushed towards the wall named George and smashed into him with all of his weight. His enemy fell backwards a foot or so, but did not drop to the ground. George maintained his balance, shifting his own weight as he grabbed Peabody by the arm and then raised a knee into the man's face. Jim's nose snapped as a spray of blood spewed out onto his shirt. He fell backwards and rolled, coming back to his feet after only a few seconds.
"That's the best you got, fucker!"
Jim screamed with rage. George pulled back the leather duster, reaching to the back of his belt. His hands returned, and with them, George held a thick black cable made of rubber or some sort of heavy material. He turned the cable over in his hands, knotting one end of it into a crude noose. With hell in his eyes, George then spoke to the man before him.
"No pain that you have ever known will compare to the agony that I have yet to show you."
Jim felt a lump catch in his throat.
"What the hell is that?"
George wrapped the untied end of the cable around the palm of one hand, pulling the black line tight with the other. Lowering his eyes, the dark figure answered his next victim with an unspoken promise of the torture still to come. This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 35, Father and Son. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.